It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The following podcast is hashtag Boone approved. It's time for another edition of the Brett Boone Podcast.
Remember when me and you almost went to blows? Lou sent me down three times too, so I know what you're talking about.
With your host, MLB All-Star, Brett Boone.
Bottom line is, you will become a successful major league hitter by hitting pitchers' mistakes.
As he sits down with his sports and entertainment friends from around the world.
You are not going to be a successful major league hitter if you hit pitchers' pitches.
This isn't just any former jocks podcast.
To change the outcome, you got to change the income. You got to change what goes in. Then that changes what goes out.
Often duplicated, but never replicated. Just like his bat flip.
Okay, now the party starts. The responsibility starts now.
Now in its fourth year, this is the one and only Brett Boone Podcast.
Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. I'm your host, Brett Boone. Today on the program, I get to catch up with one of my old general managers, currently hosts Inside Pitch, which you can catch on MLB Network, MLB Network Radio, and is a columnist for The Athletic. He also traded me. Ladies and gentlemen, the great Jim Bowden. Jimmy, thanks for coming on.
Booney, how are you? How's the golf game?
The golf game's mediocre, but I got my fix. I got to watch the Masters this week. I always love the big tourneys, but my golf game's mediocre. I'm the highest index I've been since I was 20 years old. So I stink. Long story short, I stink.
Yeah, practice, work hard like you did in baseball.
First things first, Yankees.
Yes.
Off to a great start. I don't know. Did we think this with Cole going down? They still got Nestor. Rodon's pitched good so far. Schmidt's been good at the back of that rotation. Obviously, the additions, Verdugo and Juan Soto. I put them in the reverse order. They've been a hit so far. Everybody's healthy for me since I've been watching Aaron, since he took over the Yankees. A big thing year in and year out, and all their problems come because they just don't stay healthy. Maybe I'm watching them too much. Off to a good start. Early thoughts.
Yeah, I think, first of all, Brett, the thing that stands out to me is a year ago, they were 24th in baseball in on-base percentage, and right now they're first in the American League in on-base percentage. They're first in Major League Baseball in walks, and more importantly, as you know, they now lead baseball in pitches per plate appearance at 4.18. Those are incredible numbers. And look, we can point to Juan Soto, and we need to. Guy's been on base at a 46% clip with three homers and 15 RBIs, and he has set the tone for the entire lineup, which is, hey, as a team, we're going to work the count, and we're going to make pitchers throw it in the zone, and we're going to take our walks. And that has really changed this offense. The other thing that's really happened is the youth have made a huge statement offensively, right? Anthony Volpe, 477 on base with two homers, eight RBIs. He leads the team in OPS. I mean, that's how good he's been. He leveled out his swing in the offseason. He's using the whole field. He's a different player. He's pretty special. So that stands out. Number two, one-run games. They win them, right? They're 6-0. They haven't lost yet. The other thing, they have won all five series they played so far, Booney. That's only the third time ever that's happened. The other thing that sticks out to me, quite frankly, is that's really amazing to me is that the team ERA without Gerrit Cole, okay, is literally the best it's been since 1968 after the first 15 games. And that's also with losing Jonathan Loaisiga in the bullpen, right? Are you kidding me? They have a 0.9 ERA over the last six games, and hitters are hitting 123 against his pen. And by the way, your brother Aaron is doing an absolute magnificent job manipulating and navigating the bullpen. And to your point, Marcus Stroman, a 2-1 ERA, Carlos Rodon, a 1.7 ERA. And I love watching Louis Hill because I love that electric arm out front. He has been really good as well. So, yeah, I like what I've seen with the Yankees. They look legit. And let's just pray and hope that Gerrit Cole comes back healthy by the end of May, because they are going to need him, because, quite frankly, Booney, the starting pitching and the bullpen probably are not going to hold up at this level. They need an ace. Gerrit Cole would solve that.
Yeah, it's a pretty awesome start. And I didn't see this coming. I'm going to be honest with you. I thought they'd be decent. But Cole, I think, as Judge is probably the most important position player to any team in all of baseball, I think Gerrit Cole fits the bill on the pitching side. Keeping with the Yankees for a second, I had Andy Martino on the podcast recently. He's got a new book out, The Yankee Way. Cashman's longest tenured general manager. Obviously, you were a general manager for a lot of years. How has he lasted this long?
I think, first of all, it's the Steinbrenner family that has been very loyal to him, and they deserve a lot of credit. You know, George Steinbrenner, I'll never forget, Booney, I'm a young executive in the front offices in New York at Yankee Stadium. And Sid Thrift is the senior vice president. Bob Quinn's a general manager. Lou Piniella's there. Gene Michael's there. Dallas Green is there. I mean, this is an unbelievable group. And we're all in a meeting. And George Steinbrenner walks in and he says, "Gentlemen, I'd like to introduce you to Brian Cashman, who's the son of a good friend of mine. And someday you're all going to be fired and he's going to run the New York Yankees." And literally everybody in the room laughed, said hello to Brian. But literally everybody in that room was fired by George Steinbrenner, and Brian Cashman is still running the New York Yankees. So that's a true story that happened. And look, I've known Cash a long time. And look, I think he's been a very honest person. He deals straightforward. And his relationship with the Steinbrenner family, it started with George, and now it's with Hal, is one that they take care of each other. And Brian will take the hit sometimes for above. But he's been upfront. He's been honest. And look, the Yankees don't lose. You can say what you want. Do you know Brian Cashman's career? He's never had a losing record. Now, sure, people are going to say he's got the advantage, Booney, because he's got the finances. Okay, yeah, we get that. But still, to go an entire career and never have a losing season, I think that's why he's sitting there in that position, and he should be.
In your opinion, how's the general manager role changed since your beginning? Or let's go back in the last 30 years. How has it changed?
Oh, it's a completely different job today than the one I had, Brett. It's completely changed. So, you know, back then I was the general manager, the assistant GM, and the farm director. I did all those positions, right? Now you literally have huge staffs, right? Now the GM has become the president, right, in most organizations, not the Yankees, but most organizations. And he has a GM under him. And then there's a few assistant GMs. And then we have analytic departments, right? We have legal departments. Like, we have so many departments now, and technology has played such a big part in this, the biomechanics that everybody has implemented, the stats, the analytics, the video technology, you know, increasing the pitcher spin rates and maximizing velocity and perfecting swings. So there's just so many more layers than there's ever been before. And so the GM job, when I had it, was one where you weren't just the CEO, but you were also the one grinding, right? You were cleaning the bathrooms and painting the walls too. Nowadays, the GM job is more of a CEO, where you have an entire staff under you that can basically run everything. And then you can make the final decision. So it is a lot different. The game has changed a lot.
This offseason, I think a lot of baseball had a lot to do with the RSN deal. Long-term contracts were not a plenty. Obviously, after you got past Ohtani, they gave the one big one to Yamamoto, the Japanese sensation that signed with the Dodgers. Other than that, Scott Boras, and Boras has been the most successful agent for since I can remember. And this offseason, though, the Big Five did not let's say, I'm trying to put it delicately, recently, Montgomery, who signed with the Arizona Diamondbacks, huge part of that Texas run last year to win the World Series. He just changed agents from Boris. But the big five, the Bellinger, he got his deal, not what he expected. Chapman, he got a deal, not what expected. Obviously, the reigning Cy Young Award winner in the National League, Snell, got his deal, nothing like they expected. What did you see this offseason, and what can players take of it, agents take of it going forward?
Well, look, I'll start with the point that you made, which is we had 8 to 10 teams that were concerned about their television and streaming revenues going forward, and they were scared to put too much money on the books. We had teams that didn't think they were quite ready to add free agents yet, like the Washington Nationals or Detroit Tigers, that chose to wait a year. That played into it. But let me get to the crux of the problem. When the season started, we had $1 billion of pitching on the injured list, including future Hall of Famers like Jacob DeGrom and Max Scherzer. We had a World Series MVP in Steven Strasburg, who's never going to pitch again. So we have all these pitchers that are making $30, $40, $50 million a year that are sitting on the IL. So let's go to the exact players that you brought up for a minute and kind of break it down and understand what this new wave of GMs are thinking. Let's look at Blake Snell. 8-year career. He only had 2 good years. Now, yep. Granted, he won a Cy Young in each league, Booney, right? He won one with Tampa, and he won one last year with San Diego. But 2 good years. So if I'm going to give him what he wanted, a 6-year deal, how many good years am I going to get? 2? And do I really want to pay $30 million for 4 years where he's not going to perform based on his history? Yeah, no thanks. I'll pass. Okay, so Jordan Montgomery, a little bit interesting here. I think that the hand was overplayed. I think there would have been a 4 or 5 year deal that would have sat there at around 25 a year. I think it was there for him. They chose not to do it early, and then it was too late. He had to take a shorter term deal to go back out. Matt Chapman. I love Matt Chapman's defense like you do, Booney, right? Like, yep. We love that leather. You had the leather. You appreciate the leather. I do too. The range is sick. I like the power, although he only had 17 homers last year. I like the power, but he doesn't hit for average, right? Like, I need Barry Larkin and Brett Boone hitting the middle of the lineup to get the big hit to win, right? I mean, that's what I'm looking for. That's not Chapman. Chapman is more of a 5-6-7 hitter that's going to give you occasional 3-run homer and play great defense. The asking price, just, I'm not going there. I'm sorry, I can't go there. Shorter term deal better. And then Bellinger, same boat as Blake Snell, right? We had the MVP year with the Dodgers. Then we had the pandemic. Then we had the shoulder. Then we had inconsistency. And he had 1 good year. I can't guarantee 5 or 6 years and have these bad contracts on the books. So I think it's a combination of all of that.
I think you're right, though. And I was pointing that out this winter. I said, yes, these are great players, no doubt about it. But when you're talking great and you want the $200 million, you got to be a little bit more. Great point with Chapman. Tremendous elite defender. He shores up that defense in San Francisco, but he hits 220 every year. He hits 210. Cody Bellinger was an MVP. Last year, he was comeback player of the year. He hit 165, Jim, and then he hit 210. Two years. I can't trust that when I'm throwing around hundreds of millions of dollars. I kind of have to know that I'm getting a Garrett Cole type person. And Blake Snell, I've been frustrated watching Blake Snell for years because I watch him when he's on, when he's got his stuff feeling good. I see Randy Johnson out of that arm. It's nasty. But you go Cy Young, that a bunch of years, the Padres didn't even make him an offer. How often has that happened to someone that just won a Cy Young? So you're right. I think the RSN has something to do with it and the kind of the unknowing future. But at the same time, it's not like these guys didn't have red flags when you're talking a big time deal.
Yeah, no doubt. And then in the case of JD Martinez, as you were talking about the big five, he actually was given offered a better deal by the Giants, which, you know, at his age, he's going to have 1 year deals. And he turned it down because he didn't think he'd hit in that ballpark. And I respect that from JD, because he's like, if I have to do a 1 year deal and hit there and I don't put up numbers, what am I going to get next year? So he'd rather wait, and he took less money to go with the Mets. So, you know, I think we can understand all of these. I just think we have to not ignore all the bad contracts that teams are dealing with and all the players that are on the injured list and all the risk that's coming with pitching right now. And I'll tell you, if I was sitting in the GM chair today, there's very few pitchers that I would put the big money on. Yamamoto, I get it. But I'll tell you, Bruni, I don't know about you, but I would never have bet 7 years, $172 million on Aaron Nola after watching him pitch at
without
the end
a
of
doubt.
School, to put seven more years on that, that's not going to end well. I'm telling you, Bruni, it won't end well.
I agree with you because Nola was the question mark going into the postseason. Wheeler, you know what you got with Wheeler. Nola's right. had flashes of brilliance. I see electric stuff, but it just doesn't pan out year in and year out. You look at the numbers. Now, all of a sudden, last year, postseason, emotions, Philadelphia, he pitched his butt off. That yes, got him yeah. that contract right there. And when he signed it, I said, he just, by having an unbelievable postseason, which he did, he just created that 170 that he just got. Without that, they're not even thinking about offering him another deal. I don't think it's going to be kind of like the Padres with Snell. Like, yeah, we saw you do it. We saw you win the Cy Young, but where were you the last 3 years of that contract? So they just kind of cut bait and said, we'll see you later.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think it'll end well. And again, I think more and more teams are looking at it and just, you know, I don't want to take the risk because it's just, you don't want that much money on the injured list. And that's the world we live in right now.
Quick take, Jim Bowden's take on the Ohtani Ippe situation, Ippe being his interpreter.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, and I'm glad you asked me that, Bruni, because clearly Shohei Ohtani did nothing wrong. There's no evidence. And when you have the federal investigators that get involved in these things, they turn up everything. They check all the phone records, all the paperwork from everybody involved. And when they come back and say there's no evidence that he ever bet on any sport ever, no matter what, including the illegal California betting room, I believe it. And then in the case of, you know, the money being transferred, I mean, Ippe went into the bank and committed bank fraud and pretended he was Shohei Ohtani and made the moves saying that he was him. And then, you know, he told the lawyers that Shohei said that he didn't want anyone to have access to the account where the Angels' money was coming in, that he just wanted the financial advisors and lawyers to overlook all the other money, just not that he made all that up, and Shohei had absolutely no idea. I mean, this is like Murdoch, right? I mean, this is historic bank fraud, theft. I mean, and people are saying, well, how did Shohei not know? Shohei makes so much money that he was able to defer most of his $700 million because he's making so much more than that outside of baseball. Okay. And look, that kind of money's not even been recorded publicly how much he's getting. So for him not to know, I mean, he just figures the money's coming in, being invested, and he's going about playing baseball. So he didn't know, and I'm glad the authorities cleared him. And to me, this is a case from baseball's perspective, you just forget about it. But now here's my most important point, Bruni, and this is the part that I care about. You got to have better cross checks. If you're a player, you can't rely on one interpreter if you're playing in a foreign country. You better make sure you have at least two that are cross-checking each other. Number two, the clubs. If you're the Angels, you employed Ippe, not Shohei, you did, okay? So if you're going to pay him, you better make sure you have a cross-check to make sure that the interpretations and what you're paying him, that he's actually doing his job. And if you're his agent, if you're CAA and Nez Bolillo, you better make sure you have a second interpreter or a third interpreter to make sure all the information is going properly. This should never happen to anybody. And yes, we can blame and point the blame at Shohei or point the blame at Ippe or the lawyers, but look, there's got to be in this world more cross-checks. This kind of stuff just can't happen.
Moving on, big topic right now. And I'm going to name you a few names.
Okay.
We'll start with Cole. Verlander starting a year on the IL. Scherzer, DeGrom, Bieber, Strider. You mentioned a couple bullpen guys. Loaiza, Bautista, Hendricks, Giolito, Alcantara. Recently, Pivetta, Valdez for the Houston Astros. That's an epidemic we're getting to these pitchers, their injuries. I've got a lot of I've talked to a lot of guys, Jimmy, a lot of ex-teammates that were pitchers, doctors. I talked to my trainer in Cincinnati. What's his take? Why all the injuries? He has some things about in between starts, how they train off flat ground versus mound, the sticky stuff, the pitch clock. Why is this happening? Jim Bowden's take.
Okay, so I'm going to separate the elbows from the shoulders, okay? So I'm going to take Verlander out. I'm just going to focus on the actual increase in elbow injuries and Tommy John surgeries. So I'm one that follows the science, right? I'm going to follow the data. I'm not going to follow theories, right? I could care less about people's opinions or theories. I do like the data. And Dr. James Andrews in Birmingham, Alabama, Dr. Keith Meister down there in Texas, Dr. Timothy Kremchuk that you know very well in Cincinnati, Dr. Neil Elitrosh from Curl and Job, they've been doing research on this for over 10 years. And they have been studying. And, you know, look, the Tommy John surgeries have increased dramatically in high school, college, the minor leagues, and the big leagues. It used to happen the most in the major leagues. It's actually happening more now with youth, and it's coming up that way. Mm-hmm. So we look back and say, okay, why? I know Tony Clark, who I like a lot and appreciate him, he came out and blamed it on the pitch clock. There's no data that backs that up. Okay, when we implemented the pitch clock, there weren't more injuries. And now that we've reduced it a few more seconds, it's a theory. There's no science. They haven't done any research on that. So I'm not going to look down the road. Did it play a factor? I don't know. But right now I know there's no factors. But this is what I do know. I know what has changed, and I kind of know why. So let's go. What we have done with the analytic departments, the biomechanic departments, and the pitching coaches is we have basically taken the position to pitchers. We want you to throw as hard as you can all the time. We want you to throw with the highest spin rate and the highest velocity at all times. We also want you to throw different breaking balls, different shapes, different sizes, and we want you to throw your breaking ball more than we throw your fastball. And we want you to throw your very best on every single pitch. And if it's not, we're going to go back and look at the biomechanics and we're going to show you exactly why you didn't maximize it. Okay, when you and I were growing up, or when I was growing up, because I'm older than you are, pitchers were throwing 220 and 240 innings. And I would watch Justin Verlander in his prime. He'd sit 93, 95. When he needed 98 or 99 in the seventh inning or the bases loaded and two strikes, he'd go reach and get that bad boy and punch you out, right? But he pitched at a comfort zone. He didn't try to throw his hardest with the best spin rate on every single pitch. Okay, now Spencer Strider walks into spring training with Atlanta, and they say to him, okay, look, we know that you're the favorite to win the Cy Young, but let's teach you a new breaking ball. Let's add a curveball to your repertoire. See if we can blow your elbow out. And then as Dr. Keith Meister said, now we're going to teach everybody the sweeper. We're going to put more strain on that elbow. Let's put some more on that. Oh, there's another IL. So look, we're doing it to the pitchers. So how do we solve it? I mean, a couple of things. Number one, the new brace procedure might be brilliant. So we got to watch over the next 3 years how that works. But if you want to avoid having this many injuries, tell the pitchers it's okay to pitch at 90% of your stuff and then reach back when you need it. It's okay to pitch with your fastball. Even if you have a better shot of throwing all breaking balls. I watched Cutter Crawford the other night throw 12 straight breaking balls. And I'm like, okay, that's going to work. But by August, I'm going to read that he's on the AL with a blown elbow. So I just think that we've taken it too far. And there's a balance where maybe you don't get the same dominant production, but maybe I keep you on the field. And what I'd rather have, Brett, is I'd rather have my ace make 30 starts and pitch 200 innings than I would have him make 20 starts with an ERA of 1.9 and blow out. And that's what you're going to have to measure.
And I think you have
One last point that's interesting. The three teams that are the best in baseball with analytics and biomechanics and the pitching room are the Dodgers, the Astros, and the Rays. Oh, and one more thing. They're the three teams in baseball that all have five elite starters on the injured list. Five. All three organizations. They're the best at maximizing you. They're also the best at putting you on their IL, too.
Yeah, and I think you make a great point with that ability to reach back. In my day, it was Pedro. He'd sit at 94, 95. He needed 98. Maybe the best I've ever seen at it, and he learned as he got older, was Bartolo Colon, because he always had that big arm, but he learned to pitch at 92 with a sink, more of a Maddox-type pitcher. He ended up having a hell of a career and went a long time. I also think I see the glass now thing, talking about the sticky stuff. He thinks that that was a reason he might have got hurt, gripping it one way his whole life. You know, they all had sticky substances. Even in my right. day, they were using stuff. I didn't like it, but it was tough for us to catch him. Now it's got that, you know, spider tack or whatever. It's got a name for it. Nevertheless, it was there. And the one thing for me, Jim, I'll just touch on it. I think it has something to do with how kids are brought up nowadays. We played basketball, football, baseball. We gave our arms a rest. Nowadays, you got little Johnny. He's pitching on that 10-year-old team. There's rules in place. There's 60 pitches. You can't pitch till Thursday. Problem is, little Johnny's dad takes him from that team on Saturday, goes to his B team on Sunday, throws more pitches. I think it's coming to fruition. I think you nailed it when you said back in the day, all the Tommy Johns were big leaguers. Then it went to big leaguers and minor leaguers. Now there's more youth and young people getting Tommy John than big leaguers and minor leaguers combined.
And the other reason for that, Booney, is the fact that your ligament and your only collateral ligament isn't mature until you're like 23, 24, 25 years old. So you're asking 16-year-old kids to maximize their velocity and spin rate and throwing breaking balls? Of course you're going to break. Yep. And it's unfortunate. Look, these doctors are getting calls from parents asking if they'll operate on their healthy son's elbow so they don't have to go through Tommy John when they get older. Like, it's just, it has become an epidemic, and it's something that Major League Baseball is investigating. The 30 teams are. They're doing their research. They're following the science, and hopefully in the next couple of years, they'll start putting things in place to lessen the injuries. But it is a problem we cannot ignore as an industry.
Next week on the podcast, I got Ted Barrett coming up, the retired umpire. For my whole career, I love Teddy. I've been watching today's game, and I don't know if you're guilty of this as well. I'm falling into the trap, Jim. During our day, when you were a general manager, I was a player, we didn't have that little box. We weren't that critical on every pitch. I'd go into the film room, and I'd look with a naked eye. I thought, if they missed a pitch on me, and I'd say, they could have been right. Okay. It was the naked eye. Now I got that box. Everybody's a professional. Everybody knows everything. I couldn't imagine a tougher time than being an umpire with the unbelievable scrutiny that's on them on a daily basis. Your thoughts on the umpiring, moving to the robo ump. Is it as hard as it's ever been? Because I had Tim Cheatham on. He told me the umpires, X's and O's, are as good as they've ever been. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think they are. Booney, I'm amazed at how good these umpires are. You know, with all of us staring at every single pitch.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Yeah,
I mean, we have websites, and we have people on X that are sitting there tracking every single pitch. And we're grading the umpires after every single game. And outside of Angel Hernandez, who is the worst umpire in Major League Baseball history, in my opinion,
he's bad.
So we'll just push him to the side. The rest of these umpires do an incredible job. Now, I want to say this, though, Booney. I don't want to lose a game because the umpire missed a big pitch. And when we have this much betting going around baseball as a thing, I don't want any umpire to ever have the ability to be persuaded by someone offering them money. You know, we heard this in the NBA. We've never heard it in baseball. I hope it never happens. But I want to take that part out. So, number one, I'm okay with a robot umpire or the computer that's going to call it if you can perfect it, which they haven't been able to, but they're working on it. But I'm also not opposed to what they've done in the Arizona Fall League and in the minor leagues, which is have a challenge system, right? And so in that moment in the game where the umpire literally calls a strike on Aaron Judge and a ball at his ankles, that the Yankees can sit there and challenge that particular call and get it overturned. Now, while you were celebrating in Seattle during the All-Star game last year and you were put up on the platform and everyone was giving you standing O's, I was sitting there watching the Futures game in the first base dugout, covering it for Sirius XM, and I watched the challenge system work. And I'll tell you, going into it, I didn't think I was going to like it. But when I saw it work and how fast it worked and how the crowd got into it, looking at the scoreboard, waiting for the result, I said to myself, this is going to work. It's going to work. It's like the pitch clock. People aren't going to like it at first, but it's going to work. So I'm okay with making that the first step. And then down the road, eventually you're going to absolutely have a computer call balls and strikes. It's only a matter of time, but I think the challenge system might be fun, but at the same time, you know, I want to respect these umpires because all but one, I'm just amazed at how good they are at what they do.
All but one. All right, Jim Bowden, put on your scout hat for a minute. We're all seeing it right now. I looked at him, this kid, 20 years old, 2 years in the minor league, 700 plus plate appearances, close to 800. He hit 323 and a 450 on base. He's in the big leagues, Baltimore Orioles, little bit of a rough start. What do you see when you look at Jackson Holliday?
Yeah, he's going to hit, Booney. He's going to win a batting title. Like, he's that kind of hitter. Great instincts to the game. You know, I think you watched him in his first game. He sat there in runners at second and third. Nobody out, infield playing back. He looked around. He knew what he had to do. Hit a little ground ball to second, got the RBI, moved the runner to third, went back to the dugout. And you could tell the approach at the plate was, I'm going to make sure I get a pitch that I can hit a ground ball, get that run in. Right. I mean, and that's what he is. He's a winning player. You know, I mean, Brett, when you came up and your brother came up, you guys had spent your entire life, your grandfather, Ray, your dad, Bob, they all played. They all knew the game. They all knew instincts. When you guys walked on the field as little kids, you guys had that major league instincts. You know, there's no question Jackson got it from Matt. He has the same thing. So he's going to be a star. You know, I don't quite know right now what the power is going to look like early in his career. You know, it might be a little more like Wander Franco, where he may not have the immediate power that you think he's going to have. It may take 2 or 3 years to come, like it did with you. But I definitely think it's going to come. He's going to be a star. And look, baseball's in such a great place. When you got Jackson Churio in Milwaukee, who's got a chance to be an Acuna Betts type player, you got Wyatt Langford, who has a chance to be a superstar too. You put him with Holliday. We're talking about three rookie position players that are about as exciting as any threesome I've ever seen come up in the same year. So I'm pretty excited about this group. I'm excited about their personalities, their baseball IQs, their intelligence, and they're going to be fun to follow.
Next topic for me, and this is impressive to me. If he pulls it off and if he does it for 162 games at a decent level, it'll be one of the most impressive things I've ever seen. Mookie Betts going from right field to shortstop at the big league level. I didn't think it could be done because, as we know, I had to move to second base because short, it's just a different animal. Your thoughts early in the season, Mookie Betts, can he keep this up at the shortstop position and continue to offense the way he does?
Well, let me start by this. Come November, I'm going to write him in for president of the United States.
Yeah, he's in.
I've never seen him do something he can't do ever. So scratch golfer, 300 bowler. I watched that. Like, are you kidding me? I watched him in right field and I watched him do everything on the field to win games, right? Hit for power, field, range, throwing arm, base running, stealing bases. There's nothing I never saw him do. And then I've seen him play center. I've seen him play second base. And now when he went to shortstop, I didn't know what to expect, Brett. I didn't. And I was anticipating average shortstop, you know, probably hold his own. And that's about it. And then I kept thinking at some point they'll trade for Willie Adames of Milwaukee and they'll put him over at second base, right? That's kind of what I thought the plan was going to be. And now I watch him night in and night out and I'm like, yep, he can play shortstop. And I've watched him make some diving plays. I've watched him make range plays. He's turning the double plays. I don't know if there's anything he can't do. I think I predicted preseason he'd be the MVP of the National League. I stand by that. But I've never seen somebody change positions in a reverse manner. Like, I saw Eric Davis go from short to the outfield, but I've never seen someone go from the outfield to shortstop and play like he's been playing. His makeup and character is off the charts. He is an unbelievable teammate. He plays with high energy, and he plays all 27 outs the same. Absolutely love this player. I don't know what else to say. In November, I'm writing him in.
It is unbelievable. They don't make shortstops. You always go from shortstops can play anywhere on the field, but you don't go to short. Pretty remarkable. Okay. Last thing, and I'll let you go. Opening season predictions. I'm looking at a couple of mine going, wow. You know, I kept on talking about how the NL and the AL Central are so weak. They're off to some great starts. I think the Dodgers, they're so deep, and if they stay healthy, they might even be better than I thought they were coming out. I didn't expect a big start from the Yankees. Any preseason picks that Jim Bowden make that you're looking at right now, go, I might have been wrong. Any catch in your eye?
Houston Astros might have been wrong. I saw him in spring training, and in Florida, Booney, I thought the Astros and Orioles were the two best teams in Florida, right? That's what I thought. The Astros, they had a lot of injuries to the rotation, but the bullpen's kind of a problem getting from the starters to the back three guys who have a chance to be dominant. I love the lineup. Look, I still think they'll find their way to the playoffs, but I think I might have liked them a little bit too much preseason. So I guess that would be the one team that I would point to. I think the rest is playing out pretty much the way I viewed it. I know Arizona's off to a slow start, but once they get Jordan Montgomery and Eduardo Rodriguez going, I think they'll be a wild card team as well. And the only other thing is, you know, I thought the Braves were the best team in baseball, period, coming into the season. I had the Dodgers as 1B. But with Strider going down, I think that opens up, you know, and brings a little more parity, allowing the Phillies to make a run at the Braves. And I think it helps the Dodgers come the postseason that there'll be no Spencer Strider. I think the Rangers are going to be really, really good. And if they can get to DeGrom, and they get to DeGrom in August, then watch out for Texas, because he may come and Jack Leiter may appear sometime this summer. And all of a sudden, you add two starting pitchers to that lineup, and oh boy, they're going to be tough to beat too.
Quick Scherzer update. Think he's coming back? If he comes back, does he help that team as well?
I think he does come back, but when he does, he's not going to be the future Hall of Fame pitcher you and I are used to seeing. He's not going to be the game one or two starter. He's going to probably pitch game four and maybe go four innings, five innings, and out. He's in decline. I don't think a healthy Scherzer has enough left to be what he was. But I think DeGrom does. I think DeGrom's going to walk back there and be a number one again.
You got it. All right, Jim Bowden, I appreciate you taking the time, man. For all you watching the Brett Boone podcast, now you can catch it on YouTube. Appreciate you tuning in. For those of you listening on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, we'll be right here. Thanks, Jimmy.